I'm delighted to welcome Heather Shoemaker to Michigan Writers on the Air. Heather, when you were last here, we were discussing your newest book then, Saving Arcadia, a story of conservation and community in the Great Lakes. Today, we will be talking about your new book, The Griffins of Castle Cary. And this is a very different book. This is your debut children's book. What made you switch gears and write a novel for children?
Well, I've always been wanting to write novels for children, I think ever since I was 4 years old. So it doesn't feel like switching gears to me, although people who are used to my previous books, which are all three nonfiction for adults, might be a bit surprised. But to me, it feels like coming home.
And those early children's books, you were writing books before you could read or write.
Yeah, I was always telling stories and wanting to be a children's author. So I was a late reader. I didn't read till I was seven. But I was writing books well before then, and I would dictate my stories to grown-ups and draw the pictures, and they would write the words for me. But they were published books as far as I was concerned, because they had cardboard covers, which meant they were hardbacks.
Oh, that's a great way to start. This book is set in southwest England near Glastonbury. It's a beautiful area with old cathedrals and castles. What made you decide to set the book there?
Well, I have a lot of ties to England. I have a lot of family that lives there. And I lived in England as a child for a year and went to school there. So I got to wear the British school uniform and experience life as an 11-year-old in England. And this particular part of England, Somerset, is where my family lived. And so it's where I visited the most. And to me, it was a natural place, if you're going to write an adventure that involves ghosts, to put the children who are visiting England in a place that just has a lot of ancient history at their fingertips.
Without giving too much away, would you give us a brief summary of the story? There are lots of interesting characters and...
Sure. It's about three children who go to visit England and visit their aunt. And when they're there, they sort of stir up some local ghosts, including a ghost child who is longing for a permanent playmate. So the older two kids have to unravel the mystery and race to save their sister before the ghost child takes something that doesn't belong to her.
So the three children, ages?
Two of them are close in age, 10 and 11, and then they have a younger kid sister.
And the younger kid sister has had a history of imaginary friends before this, right?
Yeah, so at first, talking about a friend that seems like an imaginary playmate doesn't raise any eyebrows, but she's quite upfront about who she's playing with, but no one really understands that it's a ghost.
And you make a difference between the children, who can see ghosts and who can't, and that's sort of age-related.
Yeah, in my mind, a ghost is a bundle of emotions and feelings that lingers on in the earth. So if somebody dies with a great longing or big feelings, that person will turn into a ghost. And the children, in my version of the world, are the ones who can sense the ghosts the best. And really, the younger the child, the more they seem like a real person. And the oldest child in my story, the ghosts are sort of flickering in and out, like bad reception. And so sometimes she can see them and sometimes she can't, and sometimes she can just sense the feelings. And that makes it, of course, more of a challenge to figure out what's going on if you can't really see what's in the room with you.
So could you read from the book and give our listeners a sense of what the story sounds like?
Sure. I will read from the opening. This is chapter one. If you know much about ghosts, you'll know that waiting is one of the things a ghost does best. Ghosts have the patience of eternity. Each April, the ghost stirred. It coughed, cried, and blew its nose, then rose to the surface. April is an in-between season, a time when cracks split open along the ancient path from winter to summer, from death to life, a time when accidents might happen. This year, the ghost dislodged a beetle from its ear and wafted up to the walnut tree. There, it settled in a crook of branches. Leafless twigs scraped, the buds on the brink of bursting, poised, silent, and swollen. This ghost was waiting for someone. Someone to whisper to. Someone to treasure. It was waiting for a child.
And it's one of several ghosts that make their appearance in the book. What are the challenges of writing for children today?
Well, I think children's authors have always had to be creative in getting rid of the parents. Because if you have too many caring and loving adults around, the main character children can't solve their own adventures, you know, solve their mysteries, have a interesting adventure, and have any story worth telling about. And so many children's books have orphans as main characters. You know, Harry Potter, all through, you can look at how many they get rid of the parents that way. I got rid of the parents by sending them to visit an aunt, and aunts are loving, but they're not quite the same as parents. But another thing that people have to, that children's authors have to contend with these days is the cell phone and technology and all this surveillance devices that we impose. So not only do you as the author have to find a way to separate the caring adults from the children, you also have to find a creative way to separate the technology from the kids. So if you read children's books, you'll see that cell phones are dropped and they're submerged in water and they're flung off moving vehicles and the batteries run down. You have to find a way to let the children be on their own so that they can really have an adventure. Otherwise, there's no climax and no excitement. The adults and the cell phones would protect it.
So England and the U.S., contemporary story, but there are differences that you had to research.
Yeah, these are American children who go to visit England. So there's a mix of both cultures going on. And I, as I said, I used to live in England as a child, and I've been there many times. I have British family. So I thought, I sort of overconfident. I thought, oh, I know all this. But then I realized I always get test readers for my manuscripts. And some of my test readers are children for a children's book, and some are children's librarians, teachers, etc. But for this book, because of the setting, being in a different country, I reached out and I got three British test readers. And boy, I thought I'd get a handful of corrections of little things that I might have overlooked. And I came back, they gave me 135 mistakes that they'd found. And so I learned all sorts of things, such as an ambulance in England, although I'd just described it as being white with red flashing lights, it's neon yellow with red and yellow checkers and blue flashing lights. So lots of details that I had to laughingly accept from my British readers.
And even the difference between 911 and...
Yeah. Well, I wanted to get rid of the ability for the children to call for help. If there's an emergency, you know, you call for mom, you make a phone call, or you call 911. And I wanted to get rid of all those options. So it was convenient that 911 is not the right phone number to call in England. You're supposed to call 999.
So you have American characters, the children and their aunts, and you have British characters. And I think back to the phrase, two nations divided by a common language. How did you get the idiom correct for the British characters?
Well, some of that was from my memory and from my family, just from my life experience. But some of it was from my test readers, because I specifically set this story in Somerset, and they would make suggestions that if I said little girl, or I would say wee lass in my draft, they would say, well, you would only say wee lass if you were from Scotland. If you're in Somerset, you would say little maid. So they would tell me the exact words to use that was very specific to this area.
You know, and I think kids really like that, the exploring languages and other cultures. I mean, I know I'm drawn to it, and I think the children are too. They have such a plasticity with language at that point.
Yes, and they're more open to learning new words. In fact, I was told by some adult readers that I should make my language, my vocabulary, more simple. And I put up a fight about that, because I said, I'm choosing the words that need to be used. I use some vocabulary words that many adults don't know, such as I talk about ovine, which is the sheep. But it's obvious from the context. And children are very open to learning new words through context. So the kids don't mind, and they absorb the words. But the adults think, oh, what's this word? But I really believe we shouldn't dumb down our language when we're writing for children, but use the words that are appropriate to tell the story.
Well, the story has ghosts, but it isn't a ghost story. What do you mean by that?
To me, this is an adventure story. It's a mystery. This is the kind of book that I devoured as a child. A group of kids, often siblings, sometimes with a fun pet as a sidekick, go off and solve an amazing mystery. And then usually it's a series and you come back and the same kids have an amazing adventure again. It's so exciting and the stakes are high. The kids are in danger and it's just, it gets you hooked on reading. And I wanted to provide that same just fantastic, exciting reading experience for kids. The fact that there are ghosts as characters, to me, doesn't really make it a ghost story. I used the ghosts because I wanted to explore these ideas about feelings being so big and heavy that you couldn't fully carry them in life. And these children are sort of special kids. They awaken the ghosts and they're able to help share the burden of their feelings to let them go.
And one of the very special characters is a Newfoundland.
Yes, I have.
A very large dog.
There is a very large Newfoundland dog in this book. And he's lovable and he's a protector. So even though I'm trying to get rid of the cell phones and the parents, I do have a dog in there who helps protect the children. And he provides comic relief and just somebody big, furry, shaggy, and lovable. And I found that there's a big crowd of Newfoundland dog lovers out there who are delighted to learn that not just Peter Pan has a Newfoundland, but now the Griffins of Castle Cary.
Now, this book has a history that goes back quite a few years. You were working on other book projects when you started this. Could you walk our listeners through the process of early drafts to finally seeing this in print?
Well, sure. You know, I was my previous books were all adult nonfiction, and I was working on those in the daytime. But I found that I wanted to start writing fiction. I didn't have any more daytime left, so I had to start getting up early. And I did this by setting my clock for about 5 a.m. And working for an hour to hour and a half before the children woke up. It was very hard to write a book with a four-year-old pulling on your shirt. So I set my alarm clock to get some early morning time, and I did this for a year. And by the end of the year, I had a semi-draft of a book. And then it wasn't in presentable form, so I set my alarm clock again and got up early for a second year. It took me about 5 years overall to write the book, including letting the book sit and rest where I just left it alone for a while and came back with new eyes, and then a lot of revisions, which included reaching out to test readers and researching, you know, British specifics for some of the scenes. So it was a long process.
So you've just touched on the business of being a writer, and this is a big part of how your family earns an income. I mean, it's an important job, right? How much time do you spend writing? How much time do you spend on the business of writing, like working with your agent, your publisher, an editor, promotion, personal appearances?
Well, there are all sides to being a writer. Actually, writing is, for me, one of the most fun parts. And also meeting the audience, meeting the readers is really fun for me. But there's a lot in between all that. So most of my actually earning a living from writing comes from speaking engagements and from writing stories for people who hire me either as an editor or as a writer for personal family stories. But then I work on my own creative projects. There are times when a new book comes out where I don't actually write any new words on a new book for a month or so. But most of the rest of the year, I work on probably several hours every morning writing chapters of a new book.
So let's go to the new book. Is there going to be another addition to Griffins, or is this a one-off?
Well, I'm hoping that readers will like this book so it becomes a series. I already have started book two, which is called The Griffins and the Wild Hunt, which follows a fantastic European legend of Midsummer Eve when a ghostly pack of hounds race across the sky. And if you get caught up in the wild hunt, you are never seen again. So, of course, my Griffin children have to meet the wild hunt, and the Newfoundland dog jumps into the pack, and they have to go rescue him.
So you went from nonfiction to fiction to this children's book. Do you see this as your future? Or
yes.
At least your near future?
No, I think this is nearly 100% of my future. I've always wanted to write for this age group, 8 to 12-year-olds, and I have so many story ideas waiting in line, clamoring for time so that I can write them. So I'm writing two books for children currently, one about pirates and one the sequel to The Griffins. And I've got more books that want to be written after that, so I can't see an end to it.
So if listeners want more information about you, your books, your appearances, the best place to start is where?
I have a website, heathershoemaker.com, and the Shoemaker is spelled S-H-U-M-A-K-E-R.
I suspect you have a presence on Facebook?
Yeah, I have Facebook, I have a blog, I have a podcast, and I have all kinds of, all my books and my speaking, ways to get in touch with me, to invite me to speak to a school or a book club is all there on the website.
So you will do personal appearances in schools?
Yes. And in fact, I've ordered I don't own a giant Newfoundland dog. Sometimes I borrow one for appearances that somebody else has. But I've recently ordered a giant stuffed plush version of a Newfoundland dog that I hope to bring with me to school visits, because everybody wants to hug a beautiful chocolate dog.
Heather, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. This is a wonderful book. I've enjoyed reading it. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much, Aaron. Good to be back.